paddling upstream. Efforts to clean up Iowa's waterways bridge agriculture, recreation, and municipal purposes. Perspective from two key players, DNR Director Chuck Gipp and Des Moines Waterworks General Manager Bill Stowe, and a reporter's roundtable analyzing a very early start to Iowa caucus posturing, all on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation.
Iowa banks know you want honest advice about how to best reach your financial goals. Whether it's financing and education, buying a new home, growing a business, or funding retirement, Iowa banks, Iowa values. MyIowaBank.com.
The Rotary Clubs of Iowa and Rotary International.
In 1985, Rotary International committed to a goal of ending polio worldwide. Very soon now, after immunizing over 2 billion children, the goal will be achieved. Rotary, humanity in motion.
Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to the causes and communities they care about, for good, for Iowa, forever. Details at iowacommunityfoundations.org. The Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure. Iowa Linked Up. Iowa telecommunications companies committed to ensuring Iowans have broadband connectivity for the 21st century. For decades, Iowa Press has brought you politicians and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond, celebrating 42 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa public television. This is the Friday, May 17 edition of Iowa Press. Here is Andrew Bott.
If you take a road trip across Iowa over the coming days, you'll likely witness some familiar springtime sights. Farmers feverishly planting their 2013 crops and rivers at their banks following some record spring rains and subsequent runoff. But while flooding or drought have yet to be a widespread issue this year, troubling signs for water quality have materialized once again as Des Moines Waterworks kicked on their world-class nitrate removal plant amid some historic readings along the central Iowa waterways. For some perspective on the state's water quality efforts, we've invited a pair of experts from rural and municipal backgrounds. DNR Director Chuck Gipp is no stranger to water issues as a former state legislator from northeast Iowa, and now as head of Iowa's Department of Natural Resources. Bill Stowe, a fixture in the City of Des Moines Public Works Department, now heads Des Moines Water Works, Iowa's largest municipal water processing facility. Gentlemen, welcome to Iowa Press.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Andrew.
Across the table, James Lynch, who writes for the Gazette in Cedar Rapids, and Radio Iowa News Director Kay Henderson.
Mr. Stowe, Andrew just mentioned nitrate levels. If you could brief us on what your measurements showed.
What our measurements have shown, unfortunately, the last 10 days or so, we've seen a trend that's very alarming, and ultimately it's resulted in this. Des Moines draws its drinking water, not only for the city of Des Moines, but for 500,000 folks in this region out of either the Raccoon or Des Moines rivers. We've seen the nitrate levels in both of those rivers at historic highs. And it's not unusual for us to see one high and the other lagging. But unfortunately, we saw both at record levels. So that has us greatly concerned about whether we can meet federal safe drinking water requirements.
Mr. Gipp, what is your agency doing to prevent this?
What's our agency doing to prevent this? First of all, the Department of Natural Resources has authority over the point source generators of nutrients that impact our waterways, that is, wastewater facilities and those. We really don't have much authority over the non-point source generators, in other words, the agricultural landscapes. We actually don't have much legislative authority to impact the water that comes into the Des Moines Water Works intakes, but we certainly have the authority of what kind of water that Bill Stowe and Des Moines Water Works puts out into those that use that water. In this particular case, I think it's good to go back on to what causes nitrates and the solubility of nitrates, because that's a product of nitrogen. Nitrogen sources in our landscape comes from a variety of sources, including fertilizer, including decomposed plant matter. And because nitrogen is soluble, when you have water going down through that soil matrix, it carries those nitrates out in that water, whether it comes through tile lines or whether it comes from runoff. Now, what we see today, and I'm not going to be apologizing for agriculture or anything in that matter, I just want to give you some of the background, the facts on this. What you see today is we had a very dry year last year. And a lot of people in agriculture, they use certified crop advisors or agronomists to determine what the nutrient level and the application rates they put onto that land. In this case, they combined soil testing to determine what the nutrient capabilities already is in that soil, what the crop they're going to put on, and then what kind of yields they anticipate getting. And so they apply their nitrogen on those particular rates. In this particular case, we had a dry year last year, and therefore the yields weren't as great with that crop, and therefore it left nitrogen in that soil matrix that normally would have been taken up into the crop that is harvested. And because of that, there's more nitrogen available for it to leach out in this particular case, and then with the water we had. So that's why you see the spikes you have today.
Director Stowe, or Mr. Stowe, you heard the director talk about the non-point pollution from farm fields, from livestock production facilities. If you were writing regulations for those facilities, what would you recommend? What sorts of things would you put in those regulations?
Certainly what we would be interested in seeing would be nutrient strategy with numerics on particular waterways. We in Des Moines are really at the base of both the Des Moines and Raccoon watersheds, about 10,000 square miles of area. Environmentalists will be the first to underscore that 90% of that land is in ag uses. So we're really talking about, as Chuck said, non-point sources for the nitrates we're seeing. We would want to see specific standards by waterways. Chuck was instrumental in working for standards that were at least suggested, if not adopted, on lake standards years ago. We would want to see very specific requirements on waterways. We would want to see greater regulation of combined animal feed operations, which are also a source of nitrogen, if not nitrates themselves. But ultimately, the problem here is very clear that it's coming from chemical fertilizers, and we believe exacerbated by field tiling, which brings water and the nutrients that's contained in the water more quickly to us as Des Moines residents.
Director Gipp, is that reasonable, what he's suggesting, and is it sustainable from an agricultural standpoint?
Well, suggesting a strategy and how we're going to reduce the impact on water quality is one thing. Actually providing for a strategy that can be implemented and reduce that is quite another. And to that goal, what you see happening in Iowa today, and there's been critics both for and against it, is an Iowa reduction, nutrient strategy reduction that's been proposed. And this is something that's being encouraged by the EPA. The EPA actually has from the Nancy Stoner memo, encouraging each state to adopt a strategy, knowing that a one-size-fits-all doesn't work, hasn't in the East Coast, certainly hasn't worked in the Chesapeake Bay. And in order to do that, to have Iowa do that, to provide for the strategy. And when trying to evolve and put together a strategy, it was determined early on in the process that what we can't have is have point source generators, that is wastewater and urban landscapes, pointing fingers at the non-point source. In return, the non-point source point fingers at the point source generators, because that's basically what's happened happened in the past. You have to have both working side by side, knowing that whatever we do contributes to nutrient impacts off our property. So with that in mind, that's where the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy has come forth, with Iowa State providing the science on the best management practice to achieve that, but both point source and non-point source working collaboratively together to develop an Iowa strategy. That draft is there. There are critics that say that it might not work, but I can tell you this, that what's happened in the past hasn't worked. So because we haven't had them working as companions and putting forth a strategy. So let's give that an opportunity to see how it works before we go beyond, because it's still going to take, no matter if you have regulatory process or the voluntary process on the non-point strategy, you still have to implement it.
Mr. Stowe, you mentioned before about keeping the nitrate levels within federal parameters. Are you worried at all with these historic levels that you're not going to be able to do that in the days ahead?
Very much so. We're walking a very precarious line between being able to meet federal clean water standards and, unfortunately, noncompliance. And nitrate is what's causing that. There are a number of factors that go into how we treat and the strategies we use, but we are milligrams per liter away from violating federal standards. And when that happens, that's going to be a significant concern to us as managers of safe drinking water for 500,000 Iowans.
Two parts on that from people who live in the city of Des Moines metro area would be health, and another the cost. This is an additional cost to Des Moines Water Works. So as an individual ratepayer in Des Moines, what are those actual costs to them? Is this something that's going to hit them?
Well, you hit it squarely. There are cost concerns, there are economic concerns, and there are confidence concerns. We're essentially in the public health business. We provide something that's vital to public health. And when there's lack of confidence or confidence is shaken in our ability to do that, that has some significant economic development concerns for us as Central Iowans, obviously. But when it comes right down to the economics, we have a $4 million world-class denitrification facility that costs us $5,000 to $10,000 a day to operate. But even with those tools available to us, we're still precariously close to violating a U.S. Environmental Protection Agency requirement.
And it's a requirement that we at the DNR do on behalf of the EPA and the Clean Water Act. We have, it's not just here in Des Moines, there's other small cities. In fact, we were meeting about one this morning about a city that whose well water exceeds the MCL for nitrate. And we give them a certain period of time to get in compliance because they have to, because, as Bill said, it's a health issue.
And those numbers aren't large compared to the install cost of that original facility. But, Mr. Gibb, do you think that Des Moines taxpayers should bear that financial burden of things that are coming from upstream?
Well, the fact of the matter is somebody's got to bear that, and it's going to be there's a lot of things we do in society that everybody helps resolve. When it comes to the back to the strategy, I'll just let you know what the figures are on that. It's estimated on the point source side, which the DNR is putting together along with the League of Cities and Iowa Business and Industry. It's estimated that part of the strategy will cost municipalities, 130 largest businesses and municipalities, $1.5 billion in order to achieve the reduction necessary on the point source side. So with that in mind, understand that the investment that's going to take for all parts of the strategy, both point and non-point source, is going to be very substantial. And we've got other things that we've been involved with in the history of Iowa, whether it be leaking underground petroleum storage tanks or Superfund sites, where we as a society determined that we have to make an investment in achieving results in that. So, yes, it's not just going to be Des Moines Water Works and residential ratepayers here that have to help pay for both point and non-point.
Mr. Stowe, you look as if you would like to add something.
Just a distinction that might be a little arcane for your viewers. We keep talking about point and non-point sources and the impact on ratepayers. Point and non-point essentially becomes piped or agricultural in Iowa, even though field tile is out there. And for folks in my profession, that's clearly a point. Under the Clean Water Act, it's treated as a non-point. What that means is there's a great deal of regulation on the point side, the urban side or the small town side or suburban side, and very little regulation on the agricultural side. Unfortunately, it's not just water customers that pay for the quality of water that we're seeing in the Des Moines and Raccoon Rivers and their degradation. It's also sewer users who pay significant amounts in trying to chase a federal requirement for point source polluters that essentially, again, overregulates point source polluters but does nothing for what is the majority source of pollution, water pollution in Iowa, and that's agricultural non-source. So we have this bizarre situation where we overregulate ratepayers on the sewer and water side and really do very little for the real source of nitrate pollution in particular or ammonia pollution in Iowa, and that's agricultural non-point sources.
Mr. Gibb, federal regulators have threatened to start inspecting Iowa livestock confinements if state inspection is inadequate. You recommended about a dozen or more inspectors be added to the ranks in your agency to carry out that function. The governor scaled back the proposal. Legislators are considering bumping it up, a different alternative. At the end of all of this discussion, can you assure Iowans that the feds aren't going to come in here and start regulating the livestock industry?
Just a little background on that. It was a petition brought by three environmental groups to EPA Region 7 in Kansas City claiming that our NPDES program, or National Pollutant Elimination Discharge Program, wasn't sufficient. There was 31 allegations originally brought in 2007, and it was deemed determined by EPA that 26 of those had no merit or were already taken care of by the department, which left five of those. One of those aspects was that they wanted the Department of Natural Resources, in order to maintain control of that program, to inspect large and medium-sized livestock facilities at least once every 5 years. And in order to do that, we asked for an appropriation to allow us to get sufficient inspectors in order to accommodate that. Original, our staff came up with a number of 1.3 million and about a dozen. We determined after looking through that and going with staff that it would be sufficient by having five that were five and be able to get it done in that matter. So that's where the number and the differences came from.
Mr. Stowe, you oversee an agency that deals with storm sewers and the aging nature of the connections between the street and the residents. What sort of investment is needed in a city like Des Moines in the system that handles not the water we see up above, but the water that's cruising around below?
Essentially, and this gets back to the regulation on point sources and lack of regulation on non-point sources, metro sewer ratepayers, and I'm talking about both sanitary and storm sewer ratepayers in the metro Des Moines area, are looking at about $250 million in investment to be able to make incremental changes and incremental improvements on river quality. So it's a huge issue from a rate-making standpoint. And ultimately, what I think the director and I can agree is it's a negligible improvement in water quality because, again, the pollutant sources are not point sources. The pollutant sources are ag, non-point sources.
Director Gipp, we're hearing that Senator Dick Dearden and Representative Henry Rahans, who chair the Natural Resources Committees at the Capitol, are going to ask for an interim committee to look at river restoration similar to the lake restoration that I believe you were involved in in the past. What would you hope comes out of that in terms of the water quality issues that Mr. Stowe was just talking about? What would you hope to see?
Well, we think that we'd like to take what the positives and the successes out of the lake restoration to other bodies of water, understanding that it's going to be much more difficult because you have in a lake you have a defined watershed, a defined size, and you can also therefore you can improve the watershed before it gets into the lake, then restore the lake, and you can see successes much earlier. Rivers are a whole different matter simply because of the vastness of a watershed.
There are a couple of other issues that relate to your agency pending at the legislature. There was an Iowa Supreme Court ruling that dealt with outdoor recreation, hunting and fishing on private property. Many legislators are agitated. We haven't much time left. Do you think that is an issue which requires legislative action?
I think it requires some type of legislative fix only because perception becomes reality in some cases. And because of a case, there's people that now are even going so far as we have a snowmobile trail, a marked trail on private property, and the property owner is saying that you cannot come DNR back onto my property to take up those stakes and those markings. I will take them up myself and bring out the fence line because they don't want these snowmobile clubs on their property. They're fearful that somebody might get hurt, and then they get sued on this matter. So whether the Supreme Court case went as far as some people perceive, the fact is the perception is there, and so I think we need a legislative fix to restore confidence by private landowners that people can come on their property without the fear of suit.
Another issue for the DNR is there's a plan at the Capitol to pay out you some of the surplus or the taxpayer overpayment to pay off the debt on Honey Creek State Park. Is that a good idea to pay that off ahead of time? And I guess then that raises the question, what do you do with Honey Creek after that? Do you sell it?
Well, that's a two-part question. First of all, the nature of the way the bonds and the way the facility is financed doesn't allow us to pay those bonds off until 2016. But what we can do is put money together now and do what they call defeasance. You put the money aside, that draws interest and immediately pay off. Because you defease these bonds, then you can have different management strategies and how you conduct that facility. And so it's important that if we can have that done, we've asked for that kind of assistance. It hasn't made the cut to this point, but that would then free up the money we're currently paying off those bonds and interest out of what they call a portion of the REAP funds to be allowed that to be used for other meaningful things for water quality and improvement.
Would one of those management strategies involve selling the park?
One of those management strategies, you need to know that Honey Creek State Resort is actually making money. It's not making enough money to pay off the bonds and the interest, but it's making money. And I think the evidence of that in Appanoose and Wayne County, when most of the state parts of the and counties in the state were falling in the recent recession, sales tax revenue was going down. Appanoose and Wayne County saw an uptick of sales tax revenue while everybody else was going down. The only change at that particular time was Honey Creek. So it's a great facility up there. And if given the opportunity to put the profits into improving the facility and advancing the facility, I think that this could be a valuable asset for the state of Iowa.
Real quick, going back to the big picture of what brought us here on water quality, I'll ask each of you, Mr. Stowe, first, what your thoughts are as far as positive or negative about the future of this issue. Do you feel like whether it be state, federal, local, city officials are actually know this is a problem, are making in general the right steps?
I'm not particularly optimistic. We have data over 40 years that shows a degradation of the water quality in both the Des Moines and Raccoon River. Chuck mentioned the nutrient reduction strategy, which in our view is more of the same. The same is not working. We need leadership on this. We're very concerned that we're not seeing the tone of leadership at the state level than we would want to see. Clearly, the next step in our view is for federal intervention on this issue.
And Mr. Gipp, I don't assume you're going to be able to solve this problem in 30 seconds, but...
No, I'm not. But I think the problem that should be identified by a question I was asked by a legislator when it comes to environmental improvements is I was asked by a legislator recently saying, what do you think is the biggest environmental issue in the state? And my answer was this, that whether you're big or small, rich or poor, urban or rural, you need to understand as an individual that what you do on your property has an impact off your property. And if we don't all collectively, whether it's federal, state, local, or individuals, become a part of the solution, all we're talking about today is just more talk. Everybody's got to understand what they do has an impact.
Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming. This is an issue that a lot of rural and urban folks in Iowa really care about. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
In just a moment, we'll shift gears on Iowa Press with a reporter's roundtable. National media descended on eastern Iowa this past week, not to examine our river's nitrate loads, but to take a very early trip to caucus country. We've asked the Des Moines Register's Jennifer Jacobs to join us for a recap of Senator Rand Paul's whirlwind Iowa trip and some other political developments. Jennifer, it kind of felt a little bit like maybe 2015, 2016, not exactly 2013, didn't it?
It did. It felt like it could have been a month out from the caucuses in January 2015. It had the energy and feel of a caucus visit. You had C-SPAN there airing live. You had the national media there, like you said, not a huge horde of media, but all the big outlets were there. And then you had Rand Paul up on stage going full attack at Hillary Clinton as if she already were the Democrats' presidential nominee. And then what also gave it a caucus feel is that he overnighted here in Iowa, and he had an itinerary that looked very much like a caucus campaign. He met with activists in private. He met with religious conservatives who make up the bulk of the turnout for the caucuses. So it seemed like it was something that could have been right ahead of the caucuses, yet it was just an introductory visit for him. This was really just his opportunity to say hello and have Iowans get to know him.
Kay, you were there too. What were your takeaways?
It struck me that Rand Paul, in some respects, is a little bit like Barack Obama, and it has nothing to do with substance. It's all about style. He had a news conference for a slew of reporters where he was very professorial, which very much reminded me of President Obama and Senator Obama when he was here campaigning. Didn't have a lot of patience for the media. And that was a little bit on display with Rand Paul, because the question that's been asked of him over and over and over recently is, name one issue on which you disagree with your father. And you can tell that really grates at him when he's asked that question. Yet when he appeared in front of a crowd of more than 500 people, he sort of lit up the room, which shows the different skills that he has, skills, frankly, that are much more honed than his father's ever were.
And James, I mean, he's kind of trying to ride the coattails a little bit of the energy that was behind his father's campaign. But we all know Mr. Paul, his father did not win Iowa. But so what do you get the inkling for? Are they in this to win this down the road?
I think so.
What are their strategy?
I think so. And he appeals to many of the same people that his father, Ron Paul, did. He's just a better version. He's not the cranky old man version. He's smooth. He at the dinner on Friday night, he came out from behind the speaker's podium and kind of stood there more casually. Saturday morning, he leaned on the podium at an event at a community center, and he had on a jacket and tie and blue jeans, for a Saturday morning event. So I think he's a much better version of his father, but on substance, much of it is the same. He appeals to libertarians. He appeals to social conservatives, the evangelical Christians to a large degree. So he's going for the same audience. He just hopes to get more of them.
But the problem for him is that audience is not sold yet, and it's primarily because he has political skills. At the Republican National Convention in Tampa, he was speaking to a room full of people primarily who were supporters of his father, people from Iowa and a few other states. And he said, hey, look, people, I'm in the Senate. I'm willing to give on something I don't care as much about to get something that's really, really important to me. And those people are all or nothing Ron Paul supporters. And to them, that's a little troublesome. And is making them not really drink all of the Kool-Aid in the Rand Paul glass yet.
And I mentioned, Jennifer, before, it's May 2013. It's not May even 2015. Is this too early? Is there a risk at all in a burnout here?
I don't think so. He is not his father. At least he's not as famous as his father. He's just not a household name. There are a lot of people. I ask people in Iowa, do you know who Rand Paul is or what does he mean to you? They don't even know who he is. The Paul name means something. But he really is not as famous as his dad. So I think he can't be here too soon. He's got a lot of work to do. I think the conservative activists, of course, know who he is. And that's what matters in the caucuses. But if he's going to run for president, Iowans, you know, across the state are going to need to know who he is. And they just don't yet.
I think one of the challenges he faces, too, is that while he really lit up the room when he took on Hillary Clinton, people didn't respond at all when he talked about outreach to Latinos, to African Americans, and broadening the base of the Republican Party. So he's going to have to convince Iowa Republicans that they do need to reach out and not go inside to try and win a race.
And for viewers at home, Scott Walker is coming next week. So this is just the beginning of some of the stuff. We'll shift gears real quickly. Last week on the program, David Koshel, a Republican strategist, mentioned, talking about the governor's race, mentioned that Tom Vilsack was kind of freezing this race by not coming out and for sure saying he's not going to be part of it. Are you getting that sense at all out there?
Yeah, for sure. We have done so many stories as the press about how Congressman Steve King froze the race for U.S. Senate on the GOP side because nobody thought that they could beat him in a primary, so they all had to stand back and wait for him to decide. There's that same feel now on the Democratic side for the governor's race. If not a freeze, it's definitely a chill because I know there's at least, you know, there's one or two candidates who are saying, you know, we're interested. But that's about it. And so people are definitely saying, are you going to reveal your intentions sometime soon so that the rest of us can decide what our intentions are?
But the clock was ticking on Steve King, so it's got to be ticking on Tom Vilsack, right, Kay?
It does. He's in a much different position, though, because of the role that he has as the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture. Plus, he's not as visible when he returns to Iowa as is Steve King.
Lots and lots of issues. We have a little bit of time until 2014, so plenty of time to talk about this. But that's going to wrap up this edition of Iowa Press. We'll be back with another edition of Iowa Press next week. Congressman Tom Latham will join us. He'll likely discuss a Washington political scene suddenly engulfed in a series of high-profile investigations. Congressman Latham, next week at our usual time, 7:30 Friday night. A second chance to see the show Sunday at noon. Thanks for joining us today.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation.
Iowa banks know you want honest advice about how to best reach your financial goals. Whether it's financing and education, buying a new home, growing a business, or funding retirement, Iowa banks, Iowa values. MyIowaBank.com.
The Rotary Clubs of Iowa and Rotary International.
In 1985, Rotary International committed to a goal of ending polio worldwide. Very soon now, after immunizing over 2 billion children, the goal will be achieved. Rotary, humanity in motion.
Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to the causes and communities they care about, for good, for Iowa, forever. Details at iowacommunityfoundations.org. The Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure. Iowa Linked Up. Iowa telecommunications companies committed to ensuring Iowans have broadband connectivity for the 21st century.